there are opportunities in life for gaining knowledge and experience.
So let's have a conversation.
Okay. What would you like to have a conversation about?
Hello and welcome to The Conversation, a Nordic Film Podcast. This is our 36th episode, and this time me and Rune are doing something different. We're checking out some stuff from our back catalog. Mm-hmm. But before we go and check that out, Rune, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm really glad that we're doing some old movies now and getting into these old masters.
Finally.
It has been a blind spot for me for quite a while. I haven't seen any Ingmar Bergman movie until this one. So, I mean, I know.
I mean, me neither. I had seen Fanny and Alexander on TV when I was a teenager or something, but beside that, nothing. And it's been on my watch list for years.
Yeah.
I'm just so happy to be doing it now. And it's his centenary. He was born 1918, so it's fitting.
It is very fitting, surprisingly.
Yeah.
So but I can't wait to start talking about that and hear what you have to say about it.
You probably saw my rating.
Yes, and maybe you saw mine.
I did.
We'll see. but that's a cliffhanger. Yeah. Right now, I want to hear what you're drinking because you said that you have some sort of like Bondedag. Husband Day.
Right? I have a backstory actually.
Yes, okay.
Because it's this like Icelandic traditional day in the calendar called Bóndadagur, which is basically husband's or male spouse day.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got home from work that day, our dining room table was like full of Weissbier, you know, white ale.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, maybe 15 different types of white ale. I'm thinking, Shep got a little tired of me drinking only Holgaden on this show.
Uh-huh.
And just, you know,
yeah.
Come on, man.
It is a little bit. It is a little bit boring.
So that means I'm not like wasting them. I'm going to take one at a time for the show.
Okay.
And today I'm drinking something called from a Lithuanian brewery called Brick by Brick.
Okay.
It's called Running Dune.
Mm-hmm.
Spiced ale. And it's a twist on the traditional
the white
Belgium.
Beer.
Yeah, white beer,
mm-hmm.
which I like so much. And I will now, Rune, I will open my beer.
That was nice.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for that for a while. Because I'm sitting here, I already opened my beer before the show, so
clumsily, yes, you did.
Yes, but how is it now? Tryggvi has been taking his first and second sip. He looks puzzled.
It's no Holgaden, I'll tell you that. But it's good.
Yeah.
It's not bad at all. It's good.
No. Okay, yeah. Spicy.
I'll have to wait for the aftertaste if it's something a little bit different.
Yeah. Exactly.
But it has the traditional coriander and lemon stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Those kind of sweet beers. Not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I like it.
Good. I took a page from your book and opted for a wheat beer as well today. I actually got a beer this time. and for some reason, Elin has not informed me about this Bondedag.
I see.
So I've been buying this by myself. but my beer is plain and simple called wheat beer. Hvedeøl. That's it.
Okay, it's Danish.
Yeah, and it's from a small brewery called Løgimose.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm going to pour it because I already opened it.
Nice.
There you go.
That is our sound now, the opening of a beer can and the pouring of beer into a glass.
Yeah.
Yes?
It smells like humle, you know.
Okay.
What is
okay.
that? Like barley? No.
Yeah. It's barley. I believe.
Usually, when beer smells a lot like that, I feel like it's kind of cheap beer.
Okay.
But it's fairly good. It's more like a pilsner, more than wheat beer. But
okay. Yeah. So it's a twist off the original formula, yeah, I guess.
It is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that's out of the way.
That's out of the way.
Have you been watching any fun movies other than loads of Ingmar Bergman?
I have actually just really gotten into Bergman.
Okay.
Since I started. And we're doing The Seventh Seal,
mm-hmm,
from 1957 later.
Yeah.
Talking about that. After I watched that, I started to... I just wanted more. I wanted more. And I, mm-hmm, did... I watched Wild Strawberries.
Of course.
Also from 57.
Mm-hmm.
And then... another one called...
Yeah, he released two movies the same year.
It's ridiculous. He was so prolific. He was, I think, under contract at the National Theater as well.
Mm-hmm.
Releasing a picture a year while still directing a play or two and writing stuff. It's ridiculous.
Why focus so much on, well, I don't know, like why not just shoot a movie, you know? People should learn from that.
Yeah. No. I mean, well, he was doing what he loved to do, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I don't know everything about Bergman. I have to read something about him and watch some more films. I watched The Virgin Spring also. Mm-hmm. So I've done three.
Okay.
But the most... there was a sidestep there in between, mm-hmm, because after watching Wild Strawberries, I got really interested in Victor Sjöström, which was starring in that film. And that was his last picture, actually. He was like 78 or something when he shot that. But I was reading about him, and he did, he directed The Phantom Carriage, the famous Swedish film from 1921.
Okay.
Silent picture. So I watched that as well.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing.
Okay.
Amazing.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
Tell me more.
We also need to go more into silent films. Something I haven't explored way too much.
No. But this one has some amazing special effects.
The silent carriage. Yeah.
Yeah, the Phantom carriage, yeah. Mm-hmm. Cor Kalina, I think it's called in with Danish/Icelandic
a Swedish accent.
Yeah, Swedish accent. But it's they did double exposure for the first time, this elaborate double exposure where they were showing ghosts, you know, picture, mm-hmm, on picture, mm-hmm, kind of thing. It's just very impressive. Also, Sjöström starred in the film and directed it.
Yeah.
And he was he was a great, great actor as well.
Okay.
And
he could transition from silent movies to speaking features.
I don't know much about him other than these two. Mm-hmm. But he was talented, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
So that's what I've been up to.
Yeah.
What about you?
I watched one movie, completely, mm-hmm, different. I mean, I didn't go down the Bergman route.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched Bergman yesterday,
mm-hmm,
just trying to catch up. I watched the Lego Batman movie.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you watched the first one, like the Lego movie.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, I found that one really hilarious and hitting that like nostalgic spot in me because I played so much with Legos and There's this one character who's a space Lego man, and he's always building spaceships, and that was me. That was just, I mean, I could always take a bunch of Legos and then create a spaceship. And wow, that's what he does all the time. So it really, it hits something personal in me. Mm-hmm. It's not a flawless movie by any means.
But I remember it being entertaining.
Yeah, and I think the technique that they used, the like it's computer animated all the way, but it's such a perfect stop motion vibe they make. And how
you're talking about the Lego movie now.
Yeah, the Lego Batman thing. The Lego movie. And and how everything is created from Legos, and it's just amazing to watch, you know, visually speaking.
Yeah.
Okay. So I've always been a little bit interested in seeing where they took this whole Batman Lego movie, which is basically the sequel to it. Mm-hmm. And now it popped up on Netflix, and I thought, why not? When I was home alone with Reskwa, I thought maybe she would enjoy it too. She did not enjoy it.
She did not.
Okay. No. So I watched it kind of in, I don't know, four different parts, just a little bit, trying to make her watch a little bit, but she didn't want to, really. And yeah, it's basically, I mean, it's so much a sequel that, I mean, it's not very great at all. Still all right, fantastic visuals, but it's all about references to old Batman movies. So all on right, that note, I'll leave that. But that was just the only movie I saw. Alien and I have been diving into Dark, into the city of Winden in Germany.
Okay.
And, have you? And we are almost at the end. We are so like we missed the last episode, actually. We contemplated making it yesterday, but we had to go to sleep for work.
So, but you're gonna watch the final one? Yes,
we're going to.
You were telling me you were annoyed with the camera a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
How's that going?
It is still extremely annoying. But you know, I have some issues with the whole Dark series, the camera being one of them, the over-explaining being another one, because it seems like they don't quite have faith in their own storytelling abilities. There's one particular segment, fourth episode, fifth episode or something, where they make a split screen with one character and another character that are, I don't think it's too much of a spoiler, but they're supposed to be the same character, you know, mm-hmm, from mm-hmm, two different time periods. The movie is about, or like the series is about time travel in some aspects. And I found it just a little bit like too explicit. Like explicitly pointing out how things work, because you already had the sense of who's who and who's related to what and stuff like that. So I feel like they're doing quite a bit of that, like over explaining some concepts that could be interpreted in different ways, but then they're like overruling it and saying this is how it is, you know. So
yeah. I mean,
probably some, like, the reason why it's like a mainstream thing and it's a lot of people like it, because I mean it's easy to digest because you're being led through it, but with this subject matter that they're talking about, it could be much more like mind boggling right?
Mind bending it could be. Yeah. Yeah, you could stretch the imagination a little bit more. I can see that's it's true.
And actually, because of those issues, I am a little bit worried about the last final episode, because if everything is pointing towards this, or like if this is the crutch of the movie, then they're going to explain everything in the final episode, and I'm a little bit hesitant to.
Just go for it.
I will go for it.
I recommended this series, and yeah, I'm sticking to my guns here.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. It's good, good entertainment. And it's German. I just want to...
Yes.
It's German.
It's great. It's great seeing this kind of stuff in German. Mm-hmm. And there's some powerful scenes and some good actors. And it's basically just that one thing in the camera movements is annoying. And then maybe a little bit of over-explaining. And one nerdy little fact. Then we can move on. Yeah. But around like seventh episode, two of the main characters were sitting down on a couch playing PlayStation, a game together, but their controllers weren't on. So they're sitting in the couch, but the controllers they're using were not turned on.
Huh.
That was a little bit. I was immediately
taken
noticing.
Out of it.
Yes,
you taken.
No, but it just I knew why they did it, because when you turn on a PlayStation controller, it kind of lights up in bright colors, in different bright colors, and it wouldn't be pleasing to the aesthetics when they were sitting there two side by side with different lighting up controllers. But they didn't. And you could tell. So they were basically just sitting there, not playing anything.
Here's a
movie
fun
magic.
Fact.
Movie magic, yeah?
Here's a fun fact. I have, I think, once played PlayStation in my life. Maybe mm-hmm. for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Something. This is maybe 15 years ago. Okay. Something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wasn't that impressed. And I was playing a board game called Besserwisser this weekend. Uh-huh. And I got the question, which company makes the PlayStation?
Yeah.
And I had to really think about it.
Okay.
But I got it in the end.
Okay, that's...
So
I'm proud of you.
PlayStation, that thing just went... totally over my head,
yeah,
and dark,
and probably a lot of other people's heads,
yeah,
you know. On the other hand, dark does like it is kind of a young series. I mean, it like I guess young people would play it. Not saying that older people don't play games on PlayStation, but obviously you don't.
Well, no. I don't.
but you know, it's just a little bit of an oversight. I can imagine, like, I've been talking about video games sometimes. There's mm-hmm. definitely some fun ones out there that could be discussed also on this show. I really want you to play some of those story-driven games, actually, at some point. For instance,
Maybe in my old age, I will turn to video games. I will turn to Football Manager again. I'm sure.
That's not story driven.
No.
Is it?
No.
No.
No. Well, partly.
Yeah.
But at the moment, you know, you go to work and you try to squeeze in a couple of movies a week, something like that.
Exactly. That's probably the reason why you get to watch a little bit more movies, because I also try to squeeze in the occasional story-driven game.
Okay.
And that just Anyway.
Anyway, can I mention one other thing? Tried. Last night we tried to watch Guardians of the Galaxy Part 2.
Okay.
That's mainly
Volume 2.
Volume 2. Mm-hmm. It's mainly for Simile, then he was really into it. Yeah.
It's all the colors.
Yeah. It didn't really have the magic of the first one, so when he went to sleep, we decided not to watch this last hour or so.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the fun thing is that the first one didn't have that magic either.
But that's where you're wrong. That was pretty good.
Yeah, well, she was green. That she was, right?
That was okay.
One
fun
of the
fact.
Characters.
Another one. Another fun fact. I'm colorblind. So who's green?
The lady alien love interest.
Oh, yeah. She's green.
Yeah, she's green.
Okay.
How do you see her?
I kind of never really thought about her color. She was some kind of a little bit dark skinned. She had a blue skinned sister.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe, okay, she's maybe a little lighter blue or something like
okay.
that.
Okay. It's so interesting to me. I think it's so amazing how people can interpret things differently and like be blind to some things. And what that does for a movie, maybe that's the sole reason why you think Guardians of the Galaxy 1 is good.
No. Could be.
Yeah.
Could contribute to it. Yeah. But I'm severely limited, as you can plainly see.
I mean, that was one of the reasons, one of the positives I took with me, that I was so amazed of how green they made her.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was beautifully done. It didn't look like makeup, didn't look like CGI. They just did something and it was good. Well made. The effects are good in that movie, probably also in the second one.
But yeah.
The story leaves.
That didn't bother me. The story in the second one in particular was just trying to explain the whole dad thing. It was way off.
Okay.
For me. Mm-hmm. But the first one was just funny and fun.
Yeah. It was a thrill ride.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be anything else. I mean, I can get on board with if you want to make something like that just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
And make it fun. And that's good. Good.
Maybe I'd already gotten some fatigue with all the superhero stuff and how everything had to tie together and...
Yeah, I try to steer clear of the superhero stuff generally. So,
Yeah, me too. Actually, unless I'm hungover on a Sunday,
yes,
which never happens anymore,
as we've covered. Yeah.
Anyway, should we get into the real stuff here and start talking about the Seventh Seal?
Let's.
Du aldrig att fråga?
Nej. Jag slutar aldrig.
Och till sitter herran, han är ganska fjärran. Men din broder Satan möter du på gatan.
Vad har du gjort av min fru?
Sommaren är förstås bättre än vintern. För på sommaren slipper man frysa. Men våren är det allra bästa.
Akta dig så inte lägger du på käften. Så att du inte ens kan göra några konster för turkar och kannibaler.
That was a clip from The Seventh Seal, the Bergman movie we decided to start with, start our Bergman journey. And apparently it is the one that most Bergman virgins start out with. Isn't that true?
I believe it is, yeah.
It has the very iconic death character. It's about a knight played by Max von Sydow, who is returning from the Crusades, realizes that Sweden is ravaged by the plague, and he starts a game of chess with death. Maybe trying to prolong his life a little bit, maybe not.
I mean, if you haven't seen this film, you should just Google it and check out images and... Yeah,
you should.
You'll find out that you've seen him before.
Yes, you've seen him. And actually, like before we get into all of this, I have seen him before. I've also seen him in a David Lynch movie. Haven't you?
Von Sydow?
No, Death.
Death.
Yes. The Mystery Man from Lost Highway.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's basically the same character.
Yes, it's
and actually, I noticed that they even have the same opening line almost.
Really?
In Lost Highway, he says, "We have already met, haven't we?" And in The Seventh Seal, he says, "I've already been with you for a long time. paraphrasing a little bit, but definitely the same kind of character.
Definitely a nod to Bergman, mm-hmm. wouldn't you say?
Yeah. And, you know, the mystery man could be death. It's definitely, like, surrounded by death. And, yeah, I think it was it was fun seeing that. Like, I've seen that picture, the image from the Seventh Seal before, but I never really connected it. Mm-hmm. But it's a definite, you know, inspiration. So on that note, I want to ask you, since I think you were the one who really said we should do this and got me into it. You gave it 5 stars on Letterboxd. I've seen mm-hmm. that. Yeah. You're saying this is a masterpiece.
I'm saying what do you it's feel about
it? Yeah, what do you feel I'm about it? Like, why? Why?
Maybe first and foremost because of these strong images. I mean, mm-hmm. I just Googled the images just now. And
again, yeah. I can see you almost have tears in your eyes.
It is beautiful, and that character death is just
striking.
That's masterful. Mm-hmm. And the white face paint and the black cloak kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's just so fun to see where things come from.
Yeah.
Because this guy's been seen all over the place. Uh-huh. In movies through the years.
And in parodies.
And in parodies, yes. Mm-hmm. But this is where I believe started. Maybe he stole it from somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's actually one of the things. Like playing chess with death, for instance. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, like, did he make that up? Or is it some saying that you've been saying before? Because it seems so familiar. It seems like the perfect allegory? For this whole thing?
Playing chess with death.
Yeah, like trying to save oneself or like this whole battle of survival, playing chess with death. I don't know, like it resonates with you and it seems like something that should be, you know, like from somewhere, but is it just from this movie? That's what I'm asking.
I don't know. It's 1957. There must have been some.
Somebody must have said it before, right?
Of course, of course. I haven't researched it like that.
No.
But I think the pictures are one huge memento mori. You're gonna die, kind of thing, and. Right from the off, we have a first image is a raven flying, mm-hmm. and then you have the knight and the squire, and the squire is singing about death, and then they have a dead body, and mm-hmm. and the knight meets death, and it's just the whole picture is a play on death. And
if he hadn't suggested the game of chess. Mm-hmm. The movie would have ended in the first frame.
Maybe. Yeah. Yes. I mean, let's dance. Let's play chess. Let's see where this goes.
Let's see where this goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, visually, you found it...
stunning.
Like, intriguing, stunning. Mm-hmm.
And just the sharpness of the... I think it's contrast.
Yeah.
Of the images, mm-hmm. black and white.
Yeah.
You would appreciate this. And this is black and white. Me being colorblind, that's fine for me. Okay.
can... Exactly. Every movie is basically black and white for you.
No. Not like that. No, it's not like that. Let's talk about that another time.
Yes.
But it's just striking, isn't it? When you, again, I'm looking at the images now. Mm-hmm. And these are like beautiful images, even. Yeah.
To play along at home, you should really do a search for the Seventh Seal and then just look at the images.
Yeah.
Okay. Go.
just that face, death.
Yeah.
And the final scene, the dance macabre, mm-hmm. the dance of death.
Yeah.
I read that that scene was it was one take. It was just they just caught the right light. There was a storm coming or just finished or something, and it was just like the last day of shooting, and they just had to get
it. It was a wrap-up party,
yeah,
basically.
Something like that.
They're all drunk.
Like some ridiculous story behind it like that, and it's like this iconic image in movie history.
Yeah.
But
it's amazing how they yeah.
Yeah. But, okay, striking images.
Yes, I mean.
What about content? I mean, you being not a religious person, what did you think?
I think it's that's the thing. Like I feel like I need to think about it a little bit more, maybe even watch it again. But it doesn't hide that it's about religion and it's about belief. It's about also existentialism. You know, what's life? What's death? What I really enjoy about it, like it is about religion, but obviously Bergman is, well, he doesn't seem religious per se, and I love the fact that, you know, I love the way that he portrays these visions. There's an actor, Joseph and Mary, right? interestingly named.
Joff and Mia.
Yeah.
And Michael. I mean, there are like Michael. Religious images everywhere.
Yeah. And you know, I lost my train of thought, but there's that guy who the first time we see Joseph, I guess.
Yeah.
He has a vision of the Virgin Mary. Mm-hmm. That's the only like religious person we see in this movie. We don't see any other visions. The only vision we see is death. And I think I'm not quite sure what it means that Joseph sees it. But the one person that is really not there is death, because it is a real thing. God and all the other like beliefs, the devil, none of that is there. There's a fear for it. You see the people in this world fear for God and the devil and feel like they're being punished. But the only thing that is really real is death, even though you obviously can't see it, but it is the real vision and it's always present. I like that. I liked how, you know, they focused on the one thing that he knew was there. You know?
True.
Bergman.
True.
Even though it's a very intangible thing. Or like, of course, death is not that intangible, but what happens and everything.
You would think that
that was a whole lot of rambling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
some nice rambling there.
Yeah, thank you.
You would think that Bergman is at the very least struggling with his religious views, and he's like the son of a minister.
Yeah.
And apparently he was punished severely by his father when he was a kid, locked in a cupboard or some, you know.
Yeah, I read some, about that.
Yeah. So he is, in many of his pictures I have read, this is something on his
conflicted
mind, religion, how it is. Mm-hmm. And watching The Seventh Seal, you would think that he's just making fun of the whole thing. But
a little bit.
And then again, in the end, we have I see hope, because Joseph and Mary, or Joff and Mia and Michael, little kid, they get away.
Mm-hmm.
So I interpret that as hope. yeah. when there's only death the entire way through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's the only one who sees a vision of the Virgin Mary, who actually gets away. But it's also the only one who is human. You know, like they serve, they offer the knight strawberries. Wild mm-hmm. strawberries.
Yes. fittingly.
Yeah, fittingly. And they're kind. They're not caught up in the world as all the other people in the world. You know? Yeah. So they're like free spirits, just living life, like being human, being together, like sticking together through thick yeah. and thin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what saves them, probably. So they have maybe the right way of interpreting religion in order, like in Bergman's view, where, I mean, you have that horrible scene, like horribly good scene with the death march or whatever it is, like the procession coming into town.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole fear-mongering and how everybody is doing something wrong and making God angry and stuff like that. It really, it's horrible to watch that kind of thing, because you can see that they, like, these people really feel that they're doing something wrong, you know, and they're bringing this thing
upon themselves.
Yeah, this
is their own fault. Yeah.
It's their own fault. And right in that scene, I mean, it's the two actors being interrupted, doing something fun, just like lighten up everybody. Like, don't take everything so seriously
mm-hmm.
here, even though death is marching in, basically.
Yeah, so there's salvation in the couple there.
Mm-hmm.
There's salvation.
Yeah.
And it ends on that note.
On a high note, yeah. Yeah, and it feels to me that those people are the main... like base in this story. Like, of course, like the knight is the protagonist in a way, but I was thinking, like, how little he's actually in the movie. It's the squire who's doing a lot of it,
mm-hmm.
Having a lot of the screen time, and then like Joseph and Mary.
But he's so compelling when he's on screen. He plays Antonius Bloch, the knight, and basically the story goes something like that. He comes home from 10 years of crusading with his mm-hmm. squire.
Yeah.
This is like the Middle Ages, 1400 or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's really struggling with his faith. And all the way through, he's looking for God, where there's no God to be found. That seems to be obvious to everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody who thinks
God
like me, at least.
And God was the whole reason for him to go on the crusade.
Yeah.
Also.
And that is great scene when the squire meets the theologian who who's basically sent them off to crusading for 10 years and just to brought on them death and pain for 10 years.
Fun fact, this theologian, did you say?
Yeah.
He was from Roskilde. He was maybe a Dane.
Of course he was. Must have been a Dane.
I felt like that was a little bit of a joke. because he had to point out, oh, you're the guy from Roskilde from Denmark.
he was a complete dick, that guy.
Yeah, exactly. No, and that brings me onto this other point. Like, I felt like there was a lot of humor in this movie. It was not that dark. I mean, I was actually laughing quite a few times, because it was genuinely funny.
The blacksmith and his wife running off with the actor there. That was the comic relief.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how sarcastic the squire was
mm-hmm.
the whole way through.
Yeah. Basically, the squire was the comic relief also, but he was mm-hmm. also the real guy. Like, the kind of like, of course, he had some sort of hatred towards women, obviously. But other than that, like he was like some sort of a realist in a way. Mm-hmm. Just like, yeah, we're here. Just better make the most of it.
I mean, he wouldn't be accepted today, with his views on women, but
not at all.
But he's still kind of a good character.
Yeah. I mean, he did save a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he said that he could have raped her, but now he saved her.
So, yes.
Yeah.
I could have raped you, but I'm saving you.
Yeah. I did save you. And I mean, so what do you think about that character? Like the woman there, because she actually gets the last frame, with everybody living. And she was, I was puzzled.
Hang on, character. She got the last frame. The woman they want, the squire.
Who was taken by the squire, like in the castle when death comes in.
Okay.
Then the last person that you end with is her kneeling, and basically accepting death, in kind of a positive way. Somehow it seemed like she was in awe or something. Okay.
I must have been writing stuff down. I didn't notice this.
Oh, you should pay attention to the frames.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We really should watch things like this twice.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's just a lot of rambling about things that can be interpreted in many different ways.
Yeah.
But
of course, there's an overwhelming interpretation of this film. And it's not really... I was kind of smiling before when he was talking about Dark and it being a little simplistic. And I thought of your rating for this film. And I thought, okay, that's why he took a star out. That's why he only gave it 4, because it is kind of simplistic. I mean, the images are strong, but the interpretation is not difficult.
No. No, but that's, I mean, you might be right. Like, I have this strong feeling that I need to watch it again in order to get some subtle detail. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it is about what we've been talking about here, basically. But there are some very striking, like, questions, actually. Like some very important questions being asked. Like, one in particular that stuck with me. Is the whole exchange between the knight Max von Sydow and the witch, or the would-be witch, when she's just about to be burned, he's asking her, like, if she has seen the devil, because obviously everybody else is saying that she's seeing this devil, and she's just completely blind to it and saying like, yeah, of course I see it because everybody is telling me I'm seeing it, basically. And he's just looking at her and saying like, all I see is like fear in your eyes, basically. And it's just such a like good image of how you can choose to believe something, or like, and others can interpret it in different ways, and how society can also make you believe different things, even though they're not real. Like, she was so accepting, kind of her situation. Like, I've never seen that in a movie. Like, always when you see witch burnings in movies, they're screaming and being like, no, I don't want this, or pushing away from it. But she was so accepting. She was like, yes, I am a witch. I see the devil. I'm just like, it's true.
Look into my eyes. You must see the devil.
You must see it because everybody sees it. But he was just like, it's just fear, you know? And, you know, he's probably seen that in the war, you know, like killing all these people. He sees the same fear in their eyes, and she's like, oh, he's right there, the devil behind you, and Max von Sydow is turning around and obviously he's not there, you know.
It's a great comment on the placebo of religion, isn't it?
Yeah. I think so.
And a little nod to Dreyer's Joan of Arc, with involving that character. You seen that?
No, the no. famous Danish person. I should watch some more of his.
You should watch it for the close-ups of Joan of Arc.
Yeah. I have to watch it. I'm sorry, I haven't.
It's on your list. It should be on your list.
So many on my list.
Yeah, it's a. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's a great comment on that, and you're right. It can be interpreted in many ways.
Yeah. So I like those. Yeah, exactly. And I would not say that it's only about religion somehow. It's just like about belief. Like believing in something, or whether you should or shouldn't, or if you can go through life without believing. And yeah, I thought that was fun to watch. It was a very interesting take on this existential theme, even though it's very much front and center.
Yeah. What about the allegorical connotations here? Because the picture is very much of its time. It's released 1957, not long after World War II, with all the incredible suffering that took place there, and the atomic age. You must be in that time confused. Mm-hmm. You can't really step into those shoes, because you haven't just watched or heard about millions of people being tortured and killed. There must be some angst going on.
Probably, yeah. But you know, I think it is kind of timeless with its themes.
True.
It might be that it, like, what triggered it was the post-war era, and you could relate mm-hmm. more to the Crusades and losing like a lot, and also the plague. I mean, you could make a direct parable, I guess. There.
How do you deal with death of such magnitude as, well, the plague? Nuclear age, I mean, Hiroshima, World War II, it has to be mm-hmm. connected, I feel. Mm-hmm.
And obviously, like Bergman is saying, like religion is not the answer.
Obviously, yes.
You know, but death is the always constant one.
Yeah.
But there's still light, as you say, like with the actors there.
You can't really cheat him, but you can maybe escape him for a while. If you're positive.
Yeah, but once you're marked, you're marked.
Yes.
Basically. But on the other hand, it was like you had the sense that the knight could actually cheat. No, not cheat, beat death in some way in the beginning of the movie. But then he kind of revealed his strategy inadvertently. And and also later he kind of tried to cheat. He kind of tried to, like, it seemed like he was ready to die somehow, and he didn't want to struggle anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I got that feeling, at least. And because I've only seen the movie once, I don't know what to make of it, really. Because again, towards the end, at the very end, he was really not wanting to die, because he finally got back to his wife, finally got like the whole band together. And then death walks in, strolls in.
Yeah. Well, I think it has a lot to do with the director's own thoughts on religion, obviously. Yeah. That's very apparent, yeah. I feel. But why did you give it only 4 out of 5?
Because I wasn't that moved or touched.
Yeah, okay.
And you know, it took me a while getting into the movie. And like it is striking visually, but I'm always a bit hesitant to accept the weird dubbing that these movies, like from this era, has, because every line is being recorded after the fact, because mm-hmm. you couldn't quite record the audio out yeah. there in these very windy situations. And it just seems a little bit off to me. So it takes a while for me to get into it. So I probably like spent the first 40 minutes just being like, yeah, I mean, I see there's something here. I like what I'm seeing, but I'm always like, I'm so aware that I'm watching a movie. But towards the end, I was more involved, I think. So again, like watching it again. That's why I haven't been watching many Fellini movies, because of that same like effect. Mm-hmm. I'm just like,
I mean, you have to just get into the mindset, I mm-hmm. think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same as when you watch silent films, you just have to be in the mindset and just kind of don't think about stuff like that.
You have to transport yourself to that era.
Yeah.
And accept that that's the means they had to work with.
What about cinematography? Like angles, for instance.
Yeah, I really enjoyed all of the shots, basically. Like, some stood out to me a little bit more than others. One in particular is the panning, as well as the smoke. What is it called in Danish? It's røgelse, like this kind of smoke you have in churches, Catholic churches.
Okay,
incense,
yeah.
Incense.
Okay.
Yeah, they had. You can see that. That's me trying to figure out how they do things, but obviously they had like a incense thing right next to the camera and swinging it in while panning, and I liked it, but I was just thinking, okay, so there's a guy standing there swinging it while panning the camera and making it go exactly into the same like place in the frame all the time. It was well done, but it was just a little bit, you know.
Yeah. Sometimes you're too much of a nuts and bolts kind of guy, aren't you?
I am. I need to be completely absorbed in the movie, not to think about those things.
Mm-hmm. I think the cinematography just is essential to the mm-hmm. whole thing, and these strong images we have.
Yeah,
that's pretty much down to Gunnar Fischer, I think it's called.
Yeah,
the cinematographer.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, the scene when he's confessing.
Yeah. I mean, that is.
That's amazing.
It's a very good scene. Very good well scene. Blocked, I guess you would say. And
it's just how I felt about the film. Every mm-hmm. I was into it right away, and every scene felt somehow simple and easily interpreted if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Yet layered and somehow profound, I felt. Maybe it's because you're in that you're thinking, yes, this is Bergman. It's mm-hmm. profound. Let's look at the genius of Bergman, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe that contributes, maybe, but that's how it affected me.
That probably takes me a little bit aback also. Like, mm-hmm. because you know that this is supposed to be the essence of cinema at the time, and profound, as you say. But you probably like to me that makes me want to look for the cracks, makes mm-hmm. me want to look for like, yeah, why it's so profound, and also like if it is really, and yeah. I see the inspiration I think it has a lot of good themes, like striking visuals. I've said that many, many times now.
Acting is
that's also good.
I mean, von Sydow, what a presence he is. And Gunnar Sjöstrand, I think he's called, the squire.
Yeah.
He's
those
good
two
as well.
Are very good.
Very good.
You know, and powerful scenes and everything. Yeah.
And B.B. Anderson, isn't she just the image of innocence and all that is good in the world?
Yeah. That's also one thing. Like, I really like the presence of the women in this movie, but like all of them are basically photo models.
Well, they're right? Swedish.
Yeah. But all the guys, like, you can say what you will about Max von Sydow, but he's like a plain guy, I guess, you know, like he's a special looking guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's not like a supermodel guy.
No, no, no. He would not be donning the runway.
No. And all the characters here are like supposed to be in the medieval times. And then you have like three women all striking, you know?
Yes.
And kind of taking out of the 60s almost, you know? and that was also just a little bit weird to me.
I mean,
you know?
So you were not happy with the casting of the female actors. You would have liked to see some. I mean, you can always criticize something like that. You could say,
yeah, you can,
well, nobody had white teeth in that time. I'll tell
exactly.
you that right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, you could say that.
You could argue stuff like that.
But you know, there weren't any plain women. Like even the witch was very like pleasant to look at.
Yes, she resembled the actress who played Joan of Arc.
That's very true. That's very true. So that might actually have been,
But I felt B.B. Anderson was well cast because she was supposed to be the essence of all that's pure.
Yeah,
and she was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I recommend you watch Wild Strawberries and. Well, especially the dream sequence there early on.
Mm-hmm.
You being a Lynch fan, you will enjoy that.
Yeah. I will watch it. It's on my watch list now.
It's nothing to do with the women of the Seventh Seal, though. I just wanted to get that
just
out there while I remembered it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Yeah, but I don't have that much of a beef with it, but it's just something that you notice, I think. But, you know, it's a movie, so.
It's just the golden age, isn't it? I mean, when did Ozu do Tokyo Story?
Yeah.
Just Google that.
I'm not sure.
This is my time, I think.
Yeah.
Tokyo Story, 1953.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is just the golden age. The auteur is being born, the concept of the auteur.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now I'm just like scrolling down this list of like images when you search for the Seventh Seal.
Mm-hmm.
And like two pages down, three pages down, there's a big old picture of the Mystery Man from Lost Highway. Yeah, so just wanted to say that before we wrap this up.
Yeah.
Getting Lynch in there one last time.
Getting Lynch in there, of course. Yeah.
But we definitely have to watch more. Well, I need to watch more Bergman. You're already well on your way.
I'm on my way.
Yeah,
I'm going to continue.
Yes. So, anything else you want
I think that's it. I just want to say, just go watch it. It's 90 odd minutes long. It's not like...
Yeah, it's not that long.
3 hours or anything.
A lot of people say, like I've been looking up a little bit, and they say like it feels like 30 minutes.
Yeah, this is history.
Yeah.
This is film history.
If you find it daunting that it's like this very profound, heavy movie, there's actually a lot of comedy in there that lightens it up, and it's fun to watch. Yeah.
I think Bergman just tried to do that in most of his films.
Yeah.
Just he's just a smart guy. He knows there has to be something to lighten the mood occasionally. You can't just, it's not all Nordic Dunklinde. What's word I'm looking for?
Nordic Noir?
No.
No, Thunglenders. Yeah, depressing Nordic stuff.
Yeah, not all.
Yeah. Yeah. We can also laugh over here.
Yes, we can. I mean, we do.
Yeah. I mean, at that time, the Danish cinema basically just made farce.
Yes.
And I don't know if I would recommend that, but
Bergman in Sweden and what was it, the Olsen Gang in
the Olsen Gang. Yeah. Fun fact is, you know, the Olsen Gang, this is a great segue, but the Olsen Gang, the leader, Egon Olsen, always ended the movies by going to prison, and he always started the movies by going out of prison.
Yeah.
And I basically live right next to that prison.
Wow.
Yeah, so basically.
So you're just stepping through like history every morning.
500 meters.
Wow.
Yeah, there's the prison.
That's
that
cool.
He walked out of. Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah, fun little fact. Anyway, so that was The Seventh Seal. What are we thinking of doing next time, Tigre?
Oh, we know. You know.
Yes.
Yes.
We know.
The Disaster Artist.
Yes.
And probably The Room as well.
Probably The Room. I will have to rewatch it. I can't remember a single line from that movie.
Really?
Not.
I just like to watch you guys.
Yes. Oh, hi, Mark. Should we say all the quotes we remember?
No, not now. I have
you look beautiful
app on
tonight.
My phone. I have an app on my phone I can go to if I'm...
Okay. You know, yeah. It's not quite the same as using them in conversation.
No. I already saw Disaster Artist, by the way.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. It has yet to be released in Denmark, but I am probably, hopefully, going to a pre-screening the 31st. Also, apparently Greg Sestero is coming for the gala premiere. That might be on the 31st, actually.
I think that's his job now, basically, touring the world and going to the Room screenings and the Disaster Artist.
Yeah. I still need to meet Tommy Wiseau, you know?
Yeah.
But, no.
Greg was good. I went to a screening where he was, it was last year when they were screening The Room.
Yeah.
And he was there and he did some, he answered a few questions and he was just generally really nice. A nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a good probably, presence. A bit more intelligible
than Tommy, probably.
A little bit.
But we love Tommy.
Yeah.
We do.
Yeah, we do. We do. And hopefully, you know, but hopefully they tackle him in a good way in the movie.
Hopefully they show him respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looking forward to it. It'll be a fun show.
I really look forward to hear what you have to say about that one.
Yeah, me too. Maybe we need to bring in some people about opinions of The Room. Because it's such a huge cult thing.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens there. But I think anyway, that's it for today.
That is it. Hope you enjoyed listening to our rambling thoughts on Bergman. Like the two Bergman virgins talking about Bergman.
Bergman. Yeah. But it's fresh perspective, hopefully.
Hopefully. Hopefully it is. And maybe we introduce some new thoughts that you can start interpreting the movie again with.
As always, we're everywhere. Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd. Just type a Nordic Film Podcast and we're there.
Yeah.
Just, you know, follow it's us. True. Send us a message, whatever.
Yeah. We would love to hear from you and like anything you want to tell us, send it to us. Contact if at theconversationpodcast.net.
Yeah. If you know a better wheat beer than Hoegaarden, please let me know.
That's a good request.
Yes.
Okay, so until further ado, we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye. I saw an excellent interview with Max von Sydow about Bergman. It's a clip. But apparently on the set, they were discussing religion and death, and Max von Sydow was adamant that there was no life after death. But Bergman said, no. There's life. I'm telling you.
Yes. You're going to dance.
Yes, I will show you. Yeah. If I die before you, I will contact you.
Yeah.
and von Sydow was asked, so did he contact you? Like, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes. But he didn't want to go into it any further. It was just the personal thing.